Welcome back to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. Today is the July 25th, 2022 edition. The USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering the USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it. You can give us a 5-star rating and leave a review on the platform of your choice. This is your co-host, Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Doing great, Chase. Still dealing with the Houston summers here, but we're making our way towards football and eventually basketball season. So lots to look forward to.
That's right. I mean, we had a strange break in the weather the last couple of days. I don't know. I mean, we're basically like topping out at like 99, 98, which is a lot nicer than like a week ago when we were topping out at 115. So I don't know if this is going to last. I looked on the historical weather things for Phoenix, and it's supposed to like be, you're supposed to still be in the 104 territory in August. So I don't know if that's going to last, but it's been a nice reprieve for a few days. We have a really interesting podcast today. Nick and I just got done recording a conversation with Spencer Harris, who is the new point person at Boulevard. Boulevard is, you probably have heard about, they're arranging the NIL deals with USC. The direct relationship here is that Boulevard's parent company, Stay Doubted, is kind of like setting itself up as a media company with a talent agency component, and Boulevard has been created for the purpose of dealing with USC. And this is now going, I mean, I think Boulevard was first announced a couple years back, but now it should be launching now in the next month or so. And Spencer Harris reached out to us after listening to our last podcast and want to clarify some things about Boulevard. So we have a really interesting conversation. So I encourage everyone to listen. But before we get to that, Nick and I were just chatting. I thought, hey, you might as well talk a little recruiting, very narrow window. We're just going to talk about Isaiah Collier and what's going on with him. So he is taking a visit. Is it this weekend to Michigan, Nick?
I think that's right. Yeah.
And then he's already announced his final four are USC and UCLA, Michigan and Cincinnati. I think in theory, all four schools have arguments for why he might go to them. Andrew Slater, right?
Andrew Slater, yep.
He, who has a very strong reputation for picking where recruits are going, essentially about a week ago said that, you know, he believed Collier would be going to Los Angeles. That means USC or UCLA. Tracy Pearson over on UCLA's message board continues to hint that he thinks UCLA is the favorite. I think SC is probably still in it, but it's an interesting recruitment. You know, this Michigan thing is like the last school to kind of just pop in at the end. And sometimes that's the school the kid lands on, especially if they come up with some really interesting NIL package. But am I missing anything with that, Nick?
No, I think that's basically right. That's a good summary of it.
And then we have AJ Johnson announcing that he will be visiting USC in early September. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
So, you know, best case scenario here, SC gets Collier and it's a package deal with his high school teammate Paige. I've heard SC is pursuing both fairly aggressively. And then, you know, there's a chance where SC's still looking to bring in Johnson as well, although I don't know how realistic that is going to be.
Yeah, and just with the Collier thing, I think, you know, Michigan might be seen as the biggest threat here. They kind of came in late in the recruitment, and they're kind of trending, so it's kind of a, you know, last bullet to dodge here for USC. I know that UCLA still thinks they're in it. You know, quick shout out to the UCLA fans that listen in on the pod. Saw you guys posting about it on Bro. So it's, I don't think it's the kind of deal where Michigan can just swipe him last minute for NIL reasons. I know lots of Michigan fans have been very upset about their lack of a developed NIL program. And, you know, USC with Boulevard, you guys will hear Spencer kind of break it down. It looks very good kind of from my standpoint. Talking with him makes me feel a lot more confident about the direction of where it's going and all that once they get it up and running in August here. But yeah, I think if I were to pick where Isaiah Collier is going to end up, I think he's going to go to USC personally.
And I guess just the only thing I'm going to say is just a little preview to our discussion with Spencer. The hole that everyone's going to recognize in Boulevard, the hole is going to be in that area that has the true kind of NCAA no-go zone, which is the university participating or being involving itself in NIL deals for recruits, for prospective student athletes. And Boulevard has been very emphatic that they're not going to be doing that. And quite frankly, I think they kind of have to be. I mean, it would be just directly flouting the one part of NIL that NCAA is seeking to regulate, truly regulate, especially having such a direct connection to the universities Boulevard is going to have. But there's going to have to be very quickly with Boulevard, like a really serious demonstration that like, hey, we can't facilitate deals for prospective student athletes, but our current student athletes, especially at the, you know, revenue generating sports, we are getting them paid and we're going to demonstrate that very quickly. Isn't that your read on things, Nick?
That's definitely my read on things. And also one thing that I found pretty enlightening just in the conversation is that the coaches kind of know how much money they have to play with, at least in the membership program. So there are two different kind of branches. There's the corporate side that can invest in any specific individual athlete. That's kind of, you know, corporations donate on a case-by-case basis to facilitate individual NIL deals. Then there's the general, like, Boulevard general membership kind of collective plus, right? And that they can, you know, distribute to the coaches, and they talk with those staffs and communicate, okay, you've got X million dollars to distribute, you know, in this recruiting class. And I don't know if the coaches can explicitly tell a recruit, hey, if you come here, we have X amount of money in our collective, you're going to get X dollars. I don't know if that's possible, but at least they can pitch, like, we have X million dollars in NIL for your recruiting class, and our starting point guard currently makes Y, right? Is that your sense of it?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And, you know, depending on, well, look, I mean, it's certainly the kind of thing that what you're talking about is kind of like the minimum, right? The minimum guaranteed amount of money, right? This is at a minimum, yeah. We have this much to allocate to your position, but there's the upside, right? And that's going to be where the other big part of this is going to come from, right? Is not only Andy Enfield, for example, saying, hey, look, we're going to have a minimum amount allocated to your position of X amount of dollars. But on top of that, you know, here are some recent deals that have been facilitated or somehow arranged to get the upside much higher than the minimum.
Right, right. So, yeah, like, let's say you're Isaiah Collier, right? Andy Enfield comes to you, and I don't know what Andy's doing in recruiting, what his pitch is, but I'm just saying, like, he could say, we've got $500,000 to allocate to the point guard position, and you're our number one point guard priority, and we want you to play 30 minutes a game. Okay, like, if you're a recruit, you could read that as, I could damn well get a good chunk of that $500,000, and I don't know what the figures are, right? If you have five positions, 500 grand per position on average, 2.5 million for basketball, that seems maybe like a little bit high, given their projected $15 million for the collective, the general funds, and basketball is a smaller roster size than, say, football. But, you know, like, let's say it's $300,000, right? They could pitch the $300,000 plus whatever corporate deals. And for the corporate deals, that's kind of more of a, you know, you'll have to believe a little bit and kind of drink the Kool-Aid of USC, right? And you could say, you know, Drew Peterson's got this corporate deal worth, you know, another $300,000, right? So there's definitely, there are things they can do. And if I were a recruit, that would be pretty enticing. It's not signing a legally binding contract that you're getting that amount of money. But once this is established and in place, it is pretty enticing for a prospective recruit in my mind.
Yeah, and it's also more, in a way, more like out in the open and transparent. It's not like some like shady side deal that somebody's, you know, even if you have it in writing, you know, you don't know who the counterparty on the deal is. Is they trustworthy? Are you gonna have to sue them if they don't pay you? Whereas if it's being facilitated through, like, you know, a very kind of public space, it's just going to be more reliable, right? So it you know, it's like the difference between would you rather have like a promissory note where Google owes you $1 million, or would you rather have a promissory note from Hugh, the used car dealer, to pay you $2 million? You know,
right?
Like, you know, like, yep. I might take the promissory note from Google, you know, rather than the $2 million promissory note from you.
Right.
So that's, I don't know how we'll see how this all works out, but it was an interesting conversation. And look, a little bit the proof's going to be the pudding here, because we're kind of to make another cliched statement, it's like the rubber's in the road. We're running out of time on recruiting, and players are going to start signing here at least start committing, I should say, very soon. So we're going to see how persuasive this Boulevard campaign has been.
Yeah, definitely. And Chase, you know, we know you're more pessimistic than me on recruiting in general. So what is your current thought on the 2023 class? Are you more optimistic than you were a month ago? How are you feeling? What's kind of your pulse on things right now?
Well, I mean, look, I think we both agree that things kind of all boil down to what does Isaiah Collier want to do? And
yeah.
I think we're close to 50% of him to SC. But I hate those percentages, because it's like, you know, we slightly lead. I'm all this, like, he's either going there or not. I mean, it's an all or nothing, you know, like he's either. So if USC gets Isaiah Collier, it's a huge win. And 2023 is going to be a very successful class, almost kind of like irrespective of whatever else happens. If Isaiah Collier doesn't go to SC, there's going to be a mad dash for the next several months trying to like stitch together a recruiting class that looks, you know, decent and cover some gaps from, you know, kind of missing out on the transfer portal this past season or off season.
Yep. And he did just release, he talked to On3 and he kind of did a little description on all four of the schools. So I'll just read out a few of these. Not that these descriptions mean everything, but you can kind of get a pulse on how he's feeling about each option. So on USC, he said, they are in California and they put people in the league. I see their guard development. Coach Enfield coached at Florida Gulf Coast. That's Dunk City right there. They get out in transition. They're getting players every year and they're getting people drafted every year. On UCLA, he said, they're definitely getting a lot of good players, and I like their play style. They got so many national championships out there. They're a program that likes to win, and it's in California, a really great experience out there. Michigan, he said, there are definitely a lot of good guards going to Michigan right now. Juwan Howard is an NBA guy. They're getting players, and they're putting them in the league. I like how they play and their play style, and I'm looking forward to learning more about them. And on Cincinnati, he said the environment was great. The fans are wild. The fan love is crazy. And that is definitely what I love about them. It was really cool. The coaching staff has been showing a lot of love. They came to my practices and stuff like that. The whole coaching staff was at my first game. There's a lot of love with Cincinnati. So kind of my read here on this is that, you know, that he likes the Cincinnati fan base a lot, but, you know, they don't have kind of the big brand. He didn't really cite the playing style or their NBA track record. So I don't think it's going to be them. With USC versus UCLA, he specifically cited Enfield and he did not cite Mick Cronin. I think the USC review was generally more glowing. We talked about the Florida Gulf Coast Dunk City thing and the NBA development. With Michigan, you know, and again, maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but he said, I'm looking forward to learning more about them. Well, if he takes, you know, the visit here, he's going to have to learn a lot about them on this visit. They kind of came in late into his recruitment, and he's probably deciding in the next couple of weeks. So it seems to me like they've got some ground to make up here. Maybe Juwan Howard does it and they can close out, but I don't know. My sense is that USC probably leads going into the Michigan visit. Michigan is going to have to sway him enough. And if USC leads, you know, right now and he's got one visit left, it's kind of hard for me to see him go to UCLA or Cincinnati. But again, that's all, you know, with the perspective of USC currently leads.
Well, I mean, we will, I guess we're just going to, I mean, as you're reading that and doing your analysis, I'm kind of working on a side project that has to do with kind of what we call textual criticism of certain books during like the early Christianity period, trying to figure out what's going on. I was like, I should really get Nick in on this like textual criticism. I think he could really break down all these statements and understand really what's going on here. So, I hope you're right. I don't think you're wrong. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to keep an even head about it. And he would be, you know, I think we discussed offline, he would be a huge recruit. I mean, a major recruit. Now, obviously, USC brought in Onyeka Okongwu and then the Mobley brothers. That was huge. But having, like, basically, you know, the number one point guard in the class from Georgia coming to LA, I mean, that would be gigantic. So he's a future NBA player. I don't know if he's going to be like a top five pick, but he's a future NBA player at some point. And I think he will be a tremendous college basketball player. So if SC can land him, that would be absolutely huge. I think a lot of your analysis makes sense, quite frankly. But again, I don't want to get ahead of myself. Before we go to the interview, Spencer, I don't know if you saw this. This broke, I think, a little bit earlier today, where ESPN is like got leaked that there is an offer for the remaining for a TV deal for the remaining schools in the Pac-12, which I guess will be the Pac-10. Now, did you see this?
I did not. No, this is okay. New to me.
So this would be the television offer. No, I don't know if this is. I mean, this is what came out during on ESPN, like on a podcast or something. $24.5 million per school per year.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Because I listened to a podcast with, I think it was a few of the Athletic guys. I want to say it was Feldman and Mandel, and they were talking about how the American gets like 10, I think, per school per year, and then the ACC gets like 30. And they thought the Pac-12 would wind up in between those two. So I guess, like, given that, you know, framing, it shouldn't be that shocking. But then again, like, if you're Oregon or Washington, right, like, you can't be happy about it.
No, I mean, I think, we'll see who ends up going to the Big 12 if that's what ends up happening. I do think there's value there. If you stitch together the right schools, to me, they would be – Oregon and Washington, Utah and Arizona State, maybe Colorado, subject to, you know, kind of, I think Colorado's willingness to invest more in the football program. That really goes to Arizona State as well. So there is value there in the right context. The problem is you just like, when you have, you know, schools like Oregon State and Washington State, and now Cal, Watt, and Stanford, in a way, they're almost negatives, you know, like people will turn off a game if like they might, they'll be like, oh, Oregon's playing. Oh, who's Oregon playing? Oh, Oregon State, click. You know, there are certain schools you just don't really want to watch those games. And Cal is definitely one of them. Stanford's not as bad, I guess. They haven't been terrible. You know, Washington State's actually been pretty decent because they've had some good coaches. But, you know, there's just too many, you know, between Arizona and Cal and Oregon State. I mean, just way too many programs that bring like nothing. And then Colorado, which was once a really kind of a great program, it just showed no interest at all in spending money on the program. So, they're going to have a come to Jesus moment here with these schools. And I don't know how this is going to shake out, but I can't imagine. If you're Oregon or Washington, how can you sign up for this? How can you sign up for $25 million a year for, you know, 12 years or whatever they're going to want? I mean, you're basically, you know, writing your own death sentence.
I totally agree with that. But I would recommend those of you who do subscribe to 24/7 Sports, Jason Shear of the Arizona website, has done a lot of really good reporting on this. So he's saying that Washington and Oregon want an unequal distribution of the revenue. And like, that makes total sense, right? They're the biggest, you know, they're in the biggest markets and they're the best programs in the conference. And that's kind of turning some of these other conferences off. And he's saying like maybe Arizona, Colorado, Utah just say, okay, F you guys, we're going to go to the Big 12. And if that happens, I you know, it's hard to imagine the Big 12 turning away Oregon and Washington, but what if they just get left kind of in the dust as independents, right? Like Phil Knight, I think, is doing everything in his power to try to get into the Big 10 or the SEC. It just doesn't seem like that's going to happen. So I don't really know what Oregon does or where they go from here. He's saying on the Arizona side of things, he thinks they're probably going to end up in the Big 12 because their president is close with a lot of Big 12, administrators, and there's some like, you know, connection there. But I think it's very uncertain. I know these Pac-12 schools for now have kind of stuck together, the remaining 10, but it all kind of seems really up in the air to me. And I don't think that ESPN figure of, you know, 24 million or whatever it was really helps solidify anything.
Yeah. Well, and also even if, you know, if Oregon and Washington didn't want a disproportionate amount, I mean, how much more can they squeeze out? I mean, you can do the math pretty quickly. I mean, it's $245 million per year. Are they going to demand 35? They're going to take $10 million extra, and then that knocks down the other eight teams by, you know, whatever, $5 million apiece. I don't know what they'll ask for. I mean, look, the truth of it is that the Pac-12 has some very uneven inherent value to different programs when it comes to football. And certainly Oregon State and Washington State, it's very difficult for them, just on the basis of geography and demographics, for them to compete at a power conference level when they're the number two program in states that don't really produce a lot of football players. That goes for Arizona as well. Now, I know Arizona is a huge basketball power, but basketball is like 15% or something of revenue generation for college sports. So that makes three. And then you've got Cal, which has basically decided to commit suicide as a athletic program. So it's rough. I mean, you've got four of the 10 Pac-12 schools are just like zeros. They don't give you a thing. And if anything, they take it away. That is a problem. But anyway, it's a problem USC and UCLA don't have to worry about, I guess, anymore. All right. Anything before we go over to the Spencer interview?
Just one last thing. You did mention the UCLA doesn't have anything to worry about anymore. What do you make of the latest Gavin Newsom posturing about getting mad over UCLA leaving Cal behind?
That's a great question. That's a great question. Okay, at the end of the day, first of all, I love all these, like, how, like, Gavin Newsom's, like, mad about everything all of a sudden. He's, like, really angry about a lot of things. It doesn't really seem to me like, I mean, he's going to get angry and so what, you know? Like, is he going to, like, impose, like, another mask mandate on UCLA? I don't know what he's going to do. Like, You know, limit UCLA's. I guess that's what they could just limit the attendance to UCLA sports to like 25% or something because of COVID protocols in perpetuity, right?
Classic.
I don't think he's going to do it. I mean, look, to the extent that if UCLA doesn't, you know, if they don't know how to negotiate and they just like cave without just like being tough, they'll probably just have to share some revenue with some of the other schools in the in the UC system. But I mean, the truth is, like, there's no real, if you think about it for a second, Gavin Newsom doesn't really have a like a logically consistent point to stand on here. First off, I think the UC regents had already said that UCLA had told them they were negotiating with the Big Ten. I think that came out, but
yeah.
But putting that aside, it's not like all the, there's how many schools in the UC system, like 14 or something. It's not like all the schools in the UC system are like part of the Pac-12.
Right.
They're part of a whole bunch of different conferences. I mean, a lot of them don't have football programs at all. And to the extent they do have football programs, they're playing in not only different conferences, they're playing in different divisions of college football. You know, basketball is much the same. So I don't know on what basis they can claim that like UCLA absolutely needs to play in like a conference with who? Cal? I mean, is that the standard? Like if Cal was going along, would Gavin Newsom not be complaining, or would he still be complaining because they're not more formally affiliated with, you know, Washington and Oregon? I mean, so I'm not exactly sure, you know, the kind of consistency in this argument. It struck me as like he was trying to flex a lot of muscles that I'm not sure if there's going to be anything behind that. And for UCLA, I mean, what is UCLA going to do? Like, oh, I get, you know what, Gavin, you're right. We're not going to take the $100 million a year. We're going to go for the $25 million a year deal. Now that we saw you're upset about it, you know. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I mean, could you imagine if they did that and just, you know, basically eliminated their sports programs? Because that's what it would effectively do, right? If they went down to $25 million, like.
I mean, there is an analog that's not nearly as extreme, but there is a funny analog, which was USC had done the, I mean, this is when they were doing all this crazy stuff with the Coliseum, which I don't even want to get into because it's so ridiculous, but.
Yeah.
There was that whole period when not only was SC kind of like doing the huge remodel, but they had sold the naming rights to the Coliseum, right? And the way the naming rights had been rolled out was, I think Fox Sports had coordinated a naming deal with United Airlines. Is that right? I think
it was United Airlines. Correct. Yeah.
And basically one politician, I think it was it Janice Hahn? Janice Hahn, who approved the deal for USC to take control of the Coliseum, which expressly included naming rights. Janice Hahn complained that the Coliseum was going to add a sponsor to its name, and SC folded. And as a result of SC folding, that was like an $8 million a year or something naming right that SC just folded on. And it came at the time that SC was going through a lot of financial problems as a result of things like having to buy out Lane Kiffin, having to buy out Steve Sarkisian. I guess the Steve Sarkisian thing wasn't a buyout, but you know, there were a number. And then obviously there's all kinds of other issues that USC was running into at the time. But we folded, and I think that was Pat Hayden. We folded on that, and we folded because one politician who had approved the deal complained about it. So there were no legal rights that she was trying to exercise. And this is a, like, I know I'm going on and on about this, but the naming rights had been priced into the economics of the deal that SC made with the Coliseum Commission to take over control. So this was like an economic benefit directly that was part of the deal, and SC folded anyway. So I don't know if UCLA will do something as similar. I know they will not. They will not fold. They're going to join the Big Ten. But I don't know if they'll like try to make some peace offering and say, oh, we'll cut Cal in at $10 million a year or something. I mean, to me, that's crazy. But I mean, I've based upon USC's behavior, the way things operate in California is a little bit different than the rest of the country.
Yeah, and I think with the Coliseum thing, they ended up like doing a compromise thing where United Airlines paid less, but now they call it the LA United Airlines Field at the LA Memorial Coliseum. So it's this like, you know, just BS like combination where USC ended up losing money because they folded on the deal. Totally ridiculous, right?
And I think they shrunk the term of the deal, and the deal was it was like the back end of the deal was much more valuable, if I remember correctly. So I'm throwing out bold round numbers here, but it was something like, you know, like a 10-year deal where the first 5 million, the first 5 years were at a lower number, and there's a big step up on the back end on the per year. And essentially United Airlines just got, they took themselves out of the back end. So the big money was gone. It was only the smaller amount that remained.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I don't know what's going to happen with it. I mean, from a USC perspective, I hope that Gavin succeeds and that UCLA has to give Cal some of their money just so I can see the meltdown on the UCLA side, and maybe they have less to play with in terms of facility upgrades and maybe like NIL and recruiting. So I hope that happens. And I would laugh so hard, and that would be great. But we'll have to see. And we got some like breaking news here. Duke has offered Andre Stojakovic. So maybe UCLA's recruiting totally falls apart if Stojakovic goes to Duke and Collier goes to UCLA.
Isn't Duke pretty loaded on personnel for 2023 already?
Yeah, they've got like at least four guys, and they're still recruiting more. So I guess they're just going to recruit eight guys a year now. So that's cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's something to follow, just kind of anecdotally, because you have to assume that there's going to be a point in time where Duke is going to fall behind at NIL. And I mean, they're still going to be competitive for basketball, but because they're such a huge brand, but like there are going to be schools popping up all around them that just have a lot more NIL money than, and by the way, you know, one of the schools suggested as a potential newcomer to the Big Ten, I actually think makes more sense than some of the ideas I've heard, is North Carolina. That would not be totally inconsistent with kind of the profile of the conference. So anyway, we'll have to see. But so I think Duke's making, and John Shire's, he's a coach, right, John Shire? They're making the most of it while they can. But I think there's going to be a point in time where there's going to be some other heavy hitters in the room.
Yep, definitely. So we'll just have to see it play out. But, you know, maybe that hurts UCLA in the short term. So
yeah,
lots of storylines to follow here over the next few weeks. And, yeah, we'll certainly report back to everyone once Isaiah Collier has made a decision, and we'll have plenty more to discuss.
That sounds good. Okay, so here is our interview with Spencer Harris. So we have a special treat. We're pleased to welcome Spencer Harris to the podcast. This is not something we typically do, but we really appreciate Spencer's willingness to discuss what's going on with Boulevard and USC. I think there's an intention, and anything I say here, by the way, I'm going to invite Spencer to correct me. I'm just going off with the information I think I have, some of this is new and I think it's accurate, but there's a plan to do a launch in August. I think Spencer's described Boulevard as kind of the fan cooperative plus model. Spencer was the director of player personnel for the football program and until very recently, and he got brought over. So I don't want to say too many things that might be incorrect. So Spencer, I'll give you like maybe 30 seconds to like introduce yourself, and then if you want to just take whatever time you think you need to kind of characterize what Boulevard is and what it will be doing.
Perfect. Well, appreciate you guys having me on. Glad to be here. I was actually on my way last week to meet with the basketball staff to talk about Boulevard in general. And I saw your podcast pop up, so I turned it on the car on the way there, and saw that there were some questions still out there. So that's why I hit you up and wanted to pop on to be able to answer those questions for you and for you, for the listeners. Just some background on me. Just like as you said, I left my position as the USC football director of player personnel just this last month to join Boulevard. I was in that position for the last 3 years, in the last 7 months with Coach Lincoln Riley. Before that, was at Fresno State for a couple of years and the University of Washington before that. So have a pretty good idea of USC and how USC operates based on my experience. And really excited about what we're doing with Boulevard. And really totally understand that this is a new frontier and there's a lot of questions out there. And just want to be able to help educate and clear the air on a lot of it. But overall, what Boulevard is it's, you know, USC's official NIL partner for all of athletics. And our goal is to facilitate NIL opportunities for athletes at the highest level and as much as possible. And doing that in a lot of different avenues, whether it's trying to connect with business leaders and alumni in the USC and Los Angeles network to facilitate more third-party sponsorship opportunities. And then the other side of it is you know, you mentioned the Collective Plus model. Well, we're trying to build a membership program out and trying to raise money and then distribute those funds to student athletes through NIL opportunities that we create that are Boulevard sponsored events. So that's really the two sides of it. But obviously, I'm here to answer questions and have a conversation with you guys about it. So I hope that gets us started.
Well, I really appreciate you, coming on here, Spencer. And you, like, you said you reached out. We were really impressed by that. Obviously, you know, you were listening to a podcast. We were like reading through this in real time, so we were rushing to be just the first to air anything on the subject. And so there was obviously we were not sure of some things. So as you mentioned, it seems like there are two broad kind of, I don't know if we call it lines of business, but two broad thoughts here. One is the direct membership fundraising that Boulevard will do. And I think there is a targeted campaign of $15 million per year over 6 years, I think. Maybe 5 years? 5 years.
We did it over the next 4.5 years through 2026, but that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay.
$15 million annually is the goal.
Right. And so I think there is a 15% overhead. So 85% of that would be going to student athletes. Is that the target?
That's correct.
Now, what you just said, and this is something I didn't fully understand. So that money is going to be allocated to student athletes as part of their own NIL deals. Is that correct? I mean, does there have to be a NIL component to money coming from that membership, you know, participation to the student athletes? There's going to be an NIL connection there?
Correct. So the 85% that gets raised through the membership program, we can facilitate and distribute to student athletes for NIL related services. So what that means is we can host Boulevard sponsored events where we can pay athletes to attend. We can create our own content, which we've already started doing, and pay athletes to participate in a photo shoot, video shoot, pay them to amplify it on social media. We can pay them to sign memorabilia, which will then distribute to our members. So there's all, we can pay them to come on a Zoom and talk about their respective sport with our members. So there's all sorts of things that we can do and create through Boulevard to facilitate these NIL opportunities. So essentially, we get to create these NIL opportunities on our own and pay them from our membership fund. And that's pretty standard how the collectives work across the country. I do want to add, though, you know, the 15% that is overhead, our goal is to generate 15% at least in additional revenue back to student athletes in different forms and fashion, whether that is the third party sponsorships, whether that's selling merchandise, Boulevard merchandise, where a percentage will go back to the athletes, whether that's hosting events where people can pay to attend, you know, whether it's a camp or a clinic or a fun, any sort of fundraiser. whether it's selling some of our original content for sponsorship dollars, all money which leads back to student athletes. So we're creating a lot of different arms that generates revenue back to the student athletes, and that's really the whole goal of this, is to have one really clear structure for all USC athletes, all coaches, all donors, all members, to be a part of this NIL game for student athletes.
And the way I understand this is that if you want to participate as a member, you can allocate up to 50% of your contribution to a particular sport, but no more than 50%. Is that correct?
That is correct. The way it was set up is you can allocate up to 50% of your donation to a specific sport. The other 50% goes to a general athlete fund. That doesn't mean it has to be split evenly or there's any prerequisites on how that general athlete fund has to get spent. It just allows us to have a little bit more flexibility where we can take care of different needs by sport and really use that in the most efficient manner overall.
And is the 50% thing is there an NCAA rule on that or regulation?
It was a USC stipulation, but something that, you know, we've received some feedback on and are continuing to work through.
Okay. Nick, do you have questions just dealing with this side of Boulevard?
Yeah, I think just to go a little bit deeper about that 50% figure and the general fund and how that gets allocated. So
yeah,
is that the kind of deal where you work with the coaches and the coaches talk to their players and they have a certain set of needs for their roster in terms of NIL, and that's just a partnership kind of between you guys and the staffs in terms of figuring out the best need for those funds per se?
Yeah, absolutely. It allows us to take care of priorities that we can work with Lincoln Riley and Andy Enfield and Lindsey Gottlieb and understand what their specific needs are to compete, both, you know, taking care of their current roster, making sure that their talent, their priority is taken care of and stays here. And then understanding, you know, what the future looks like for them. We don't have interaction with recruits because we're not allowed to, but that doesn't mean we can't plan for recruits and plan for people to come step on campus and be ready with a really clear structure and agenda for them once they do step on campus. So that's where that general athlete fund, where if we know exactly how much we have every year in that fund, we can disperse it by sport based on need, and then we can go to communicate with those coaches and say, hey, you have this to plan with, roughly, you have this to plan with. How do you want to divide it up here based on the timing, who's coming, who's leaving, all those sorts of things that go into it.
Yeah, that's great. Chase, any follow-up there?
You know, one question I'm interested in, because we're about to, you know, we'll ask you some questions about, obviously, your coordination of independent NIL deals. Before we get to that, are you guys, in addition to looking for individual members for Boulevard, are you looking for corporate sponsorship on the $75 million campaign?
The $75 million campaign is purely through our membership program that we are trying to raise, and that's pretty competitive with the other, you know, elite Power Five programs across the country that we're trying to compete for championships with. And then in addition, it would be the corporate sponsors.
So corporate sponsors would be above and beyond the $75 million in theory?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. So that helps us a lot. And I think that gives us a good idea of what we're trying to do, where SC is trying to do on the kind of the Boulevard membership and that contribution and that fundraise. The interesting, I want to say more interesting, but a very interesting aspect of this is going to be the individual NIL deals for, you know, student athletes. These are the big ones that make the, you know, social media and things like that. And I guess Boulevard will have a role in trying to coordinate some of those deals. And I believe I'm right, and I'll let you correct me if I'm wrong, Spencer, and you can just speak to that a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our offerings with Boulevard, and this is a huge sell in recruiting for all of our sports, is that we give every student athlete a chance to opt in to Boulevard representation. So they're signing a marketing agreement with Boulevard, and it allows us to go use their NIL to go seek out these third-party sponsorships. And so when corporate sponsors approach us, we already have this full slate of athletes that we know and understand and can match with these corporate sponsors. So that is a huge plus, especially in, you know, what we call the media capital of college athletics, and this major business community. Corporate sponsors, they don't want to, there's a lot of barriers to entry to work with individual athletes. They don't know them. They're not comfortable with them. They might not want to work with their agents and go through all these hoops to jump through. Well, we have this structure here, who has expertise and knowledge and background in the space, who already has relationships with these corporate sponsors, it makes it a lot easier to work with. So that's a huge benefit of our structure here, where the athletes, they opt in for nothing, and they already have someone working in their corner to bring them these sponsorship opportunities.
So you guys are really kind of acting in this line of business, you guys are really acting as the talent agents for whatever student athletes sign up to participate. Is that right?
Exactly. We're doing their negotiations, their contract review, the logistics to make sure that they show up at the right time, wearing the right thing, working with, you know, the operations staff to make sure that it fits in their schedule, make sure that they don't have a tutor appointment, practice, making sure that everything is compliant. There's a lot of legs to this where things could go wrong, and we're there to help manage all of those little processes.
Okay. And what is, I guess you can tell me as much as you feel comfortable, but because that could potentially be, I mean, how many student athletes are at USC? I mean, there's got to be 600 or something.
There's 21 sports and roughly 600 athletes.
Yeah, I was just guessing. So, and presumably the majority are going to want to sign up for this because they're not going to probably have enough of their own cachet to go out and be like, getting independent NIL deals. So how is the staffing on your guys? And do you think you have adequate staffing to go and kind of, you know, do this? There's a lot you just mentioned.
Yeah, it's definitely a big undertaking. And myself and one other person came over from the football staff. Her name is Megan Mueller to really do our athlete relations, where I'll do more of the day-to-day kind of organizational management and working with the membership program. But there's a whole nother staff. They're headquartered in Dallas is the parent company that does a lot of work on the partnership side, the creative side. So we'll evaluate as we move forward here and see if we need to add more staff. Really, we are just kind of starting this process off of getting in front of all the different teams and educating the athletes on this opportunity. So once we, you know, get a couple months under our belt, I think we'll be able to have a better feel for, you know, if we're staffed enough.
And your parent is State Doubted. That's correct?
That's correct.
And how do you know, are they involved with other universities having this type of relationship?
Not at the moment.
Okay. So one of the big issues I think everyone has talked about, and I think you've answered this in other forums, but we'll you know, clarify here. Boulevard cannot participate in coordinating any type of NIL arrangement for a prospective student athlete. So a recruit cannot have a direct relationship with Boulevard. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, and I think I'm guessing the idea is that if you guys kind of demonstrate how strong you have been and, you know, facilitating NIL type, you know, deals and revenues going to existing student athletes, that the recruits are going to see this and be like, oh, this is the place I want to go. They take care of the student athletes once they arrive. Am I out of, Am I speaking out of turn there, or is that kind of generally the idea?
No, that's exactly it. We have to produce a proof of concept. So we have to execute this and make sure that we are supporting, I'll just use basketball players. We have to be able to show that the starting five basketball players made X amount of money in X amount of months so that, you know, Coach Enfield can go and recruit the next group. You could look at it generally like that, or you could look at it even, you know, down to the point guard level. You know, point guard came into USC's program. He joined Boulevard. He was here for 2 years. He made X amount of dollars, and Andy gets to go use that to go recruit the next guy. So we can have communication with the coaching staff and educate them generally on how their team is producing in terms of NIL. And what sort of funds they're bringing in, both from us, the Boulevard sponsored events, from outside sponsors. We can show, you know, hey, they're working with these corporate sponsors, or these people that are former USC alumni are involved in this manner. And here's what your potential is when you come to USC.
So for student athletes who will arrive ultimately at SC, what is the first moment? What is the trigger point? What's the first moment in time that they can have a formal relationship with Boulevard?
The day they step on campus as a student athlete.
Okay. So, and that might be in May or June if they're involved in summer school. Otherwise, it might be in late August.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. All right. And most likely for basketball, it would be in June when they come for summer conditioning.
Okay. Nick, you got any questions on this side of things?
I kind of wanted to drill down a bit just on the corporate sponsorship versus the kind of general fund, right? So correct me if I'm wrong here, Spencer, but a corporate sponsor can specifically pick an athlete. Like, let's say I had a company and I wanted to do an NIL deal with Drew Peterson, just purely hypothetically.
Yep.
You could actually do that with the specific athlete if you're a corporation, but not if you're just donating as an individual. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So if you own Lululemon, you can work with us and we will facilitate the whole process to promote the athlete of your choice. Let's say you pick Drew. So we'll work with Lululemon on exactly how much you want to pay him, what you want him to do, and we will help ensure that he completes those tasks. We'll do the entire payment process for you, the contract review, all those type of things that go into it, and we'll get that done. Whereas if you don't own Lululemon, you're not tied to a business or don't have heavily influence in a business, then you would just be an individual contributing to the membership program. Which goes into those different slots of general athlete fund or sports specific. And awesome. I'll say this too, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, a major corporate sponsor like Lululemon. It could be down to a local ice cream shop that you own and you want Drew Peterson to do some basic promotion for you. It's wide varying.
Yeah. And one follow-up, kind of a little unrelated to that specific question, but just to clarify, you mentioned earlier of the coaches kind of knowing how much they have in NIL to distribute in any given year. Obviously, with recruiting in football and basketball, especially like baseball too, it happens very early on in high school. Do you guys have it budgeted out like several years in terms of your like projections for each program within the university of what that number will be in any given year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's we can project it out. Obviously, we have to go raise the money and hit some of those goals. But yeah, it's definitely organized how, you know, we to the best of our ability. Obviously, things change, priorities change. But yes, there is a concept of planning by sport when we plan this out.
Awesome. Yeah. Chase, I don't know where you want to take this from here. Do you have other stuff you want to touch on here?
Well, I think, you know, Spencer, I think is certainly discussed this intelligently and probably to the best of my understanding of how it's going to work. Spencer, is there an actual day in August when this, when you guys are doing your, you know, release or debut?
Not quite yet. We'll have that information for you guys soon.
Okay. And this is more, you know, I don't even know how to ask this question, probably in a way that you could answer, but I'll just kind of throw it out there. If there is at some point in time some sort of ruling made or a law that seems to be in effect that kind of nullifies the NCAA's ability to restrict NIL coordination between universities and prospective student athletes on NIL deals. Is that something that then as a result of that, maybe Boulevard would have to revisit how that would work?
Are you saying if the rule goes away that we can't communicate with recruits?
Well, yeah, something like, let's say that this is very hypothetical, so I'm putting you in an impossible position, but you know, look, let's say John Ruiz in Miami, the NCAA tries to take some enforcement action as a result of, like, you know, his signing players as recruits to go to Miami and you're doing NIL deals. That's challenged in court, and there's a court ruling that basically says, sorry, NCAA, you just can't do that. You're out of luck. Is there then going to be a thought process like, okay, well, I guess the NCAA no longer has the power to restrict a university's ability to kind of coordinate these deals with prospective student athletes?
Yeah, here's what I'd say. I'm here and Stay Doubted is here to be as aggressive as possible in supporting our players in this space. And we will do whatever is necessary within the rules that we are confined to. So if the rules change, we'll change with them. But there's a lot of rules that it's not just NCAA, it's USC, it's California. So there's a lot of different stipulations that we do have to abide by, but if they're changing, then we're going to be flexible with it to try to be the most competitive in the country. That would be my mindset. Where obviously, you know, there's some other programs out there that are may not be playing in that same sandbox. We can't control that. We don't want to lose recruits ever, right? I think that's the goal, but we can't control everything. All we can do is play with what we're given and just try to be as aggressive as possible, and that's our mindset.
All right. Well, that is probably as well answered as I can imagine. So I really appreciate that, Spencer. Nick, I'm guessing you're good for now.
Yeah. No, this is great. Definitely very informative on my end. So. Great having you on, Spencer. Hopefully we can get you back at some point too. So
no problem. I'm happy to, especially once we get really rolling here. And I think you guys will see some things on social media in the next couple of months that will pique your interest again. So happy to jump on down the road.
All right. Well, Spencer, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.